Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Hi, welcome to the Bechdel cast. My name is Caitlin Durante.
And my name's Jamie Loftus.
And what do we do here, Jamie? Sorry to put
you
on the spot.
No, it's fine. It's a test. This is our podcast about the representation of women in movies using the Bechdel test as a jumping off point for discussion. How did I do?
That was so wonderful.
Thank you so much.
And the Bechdel test, if you're not familiar, if perhaps you're tuning in for the very first time, mm-hmm. is a media test. I wanted to go into a little bit more detail than we normally do, because I think this is like the perfect episode and the perfect movie to mm-hmm. provide just a little more context and talk a little bit more about the origins of the Bechdel test than we normally do.
You're being a real lead Deb right now.
I am the Deb. Squad leader, the squad captain.
Leader. We're going to get into a fight.
But by the end, we will make up. And
yes,
our
and
friendship.
One of us will be in love and the other one will be in charge.
So you'll be in love and I'll be in charge.
Okay.
That's because that's how our normal lives are right now. Okay. Anyway, so Alison Bechdel, queer icon, she inadvertently created the Bechdel test in her book Dykes to Watch Out For, published in 1985. I feel like some people think that she like deliberately set out to create this specific media test, but it was more
it's just a comic. It was like a one-off
yeah,
comic.
Yeah, it appeared in the book, and then that was later co-opted into the test that we now use and that is widely used to apply to, you know, media and movies and things like that. Alison Bechdel credits the idea to her friend Liz Wallace and to the writings of Virginia Woolf, specifically Woolf's essay A Room of One's Own, which is a feminist text.
Love it.
The Bechdel test is sometimes referred to as the Bechdel-Wallace test, mm-hmm. Which Alison Bechdel is said to prefer. But we are jerks, so we only call it the Bechdel test.
I love when friends credit friends.
Yeah.
It's critical.
It's great. And then in the comic, Dykes to Watch Out For, it has two lesbian characters, and the context of their conversation is that there is so little queer women representation in movies that the only way for them to imagine that a female character in a movie might be a lesbian is if she is seen talking to another woman and they are not talking about men.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the origin of the Bechdel test, and I just wanted to share that to our listeners.
And let's share the original comic on our Twitter as
yes.
well. I know it's readily available, so we can do that as well.
Indeed.
Caitlin's History Corner.
Yeah. A new segment on every episode
no,
coming
please
out.
No. Please God, no.
Shall we introduce our guests?
Let's do it. I'm so excited.
We've got two today. Yes. A very exciting time. They are the hosts of the Les Hangout podcast. It's Lee Holmes Foster and Ellie Brigada. Hi. Did I say that right? Brigada.
It's Brigida.
Brigida.
But I think you should change it to
Honestly,
Brigada.
I love it. Brigada. It sounds a little bit more like the things that I love.
Sounds like a beverage or...
Yeah.
Bread.
So sorry for fucking up your name, but welcome.
It's all good. They literally messed up my name at my graduation, and I waited for them. I was like, you are going to get it right. So they said it like 7 times, and then I finally walked.
That is an incredible flex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So tell us, Lee, let's start with you. What is your history, your relationship with the movie? Oh, by the way, today's movie is Debs.
Yes.
Debs is a cult classic.
Yes, technically 2004, but released widely in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
Rom-com, technically, although it feels like a DCOM to me in a lot of ways. I was getting a lot of DCOM vibes.
Sure. Oh, yeah. So many green screens.
Yeah, so many green screens and like goofy, like boing kind of music. Very DCOM.
Yes. It's so great.
I loved it.
What is your experience, Lee?
Okay, so my experience, because I'm going to say, yeah, I feel like I first saw Debs in college, which would make sense. That was like right after it came out. And I would say my experience with Debs is that for a really, really long time, when we would try to talk to like friends or people about like queer movies, we would say for a long time, there's like one like good queer movie that's like a real movie, which is Imagine Me and You. And then there's like two amazing like campy movies, and those are Debs and But I'm a Cheerleader.
Mm-hmm.
And so for a long time, Debs was like that go-to of like, it's so terrible and amazing just all at the same time, and there just wasn't a lot else out there, so so you'd kind of just watch those.
We talked about this on our But I'm a Cheerleader episode
where
our guest was like, there are only two fun lesbian movies and one of them is But I'm a Cheerleader and the other one is Debs.
This has been like a request for a long time.
It's such a classic.
It's such a horribly amazing movie. The first time that I ever saw it actually was when I watched it with Lee. We do a segment on our podcast, called Les Essentials.
You've never seen it?
I had never seen it. Yeah, it was the first time that I had seen it. And I don't know why I hadn't seen it before, but I'm also a bit younger than Lee. So I was definitely not a lesbian, or I was a lesbian, but I wasn't out when Debs came out.
Mm.
Yeah.
So I saw it for the first time then and have since watched it probably 5 or 6 times.
Yeah.
Yeah, because everything else is so depressing. Like, if you want to watch something upbeat and lesbian, like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Jamie, what's your relationship history?
Like most movies, I'd never seen it before until today. And I watched it twice in a row. And it's like, it's so up my alley in so many ways, but it's just like the low budge vibes you get from it, the multitude of like the character actors are out in this movie, some wild character actor choices, the outfits are weird. It's everything. It looks like it cost $7 to make, and I love Jordana Brewster, and it was just,
she's great in this,
she's so good. And it's weird because I guess I'm mostly judging her catalog from seeing her on my mom's soaps when I was really young.
Oh.
Because she started as a soap star, and seeing her in the Fast and the Furious movies. But this is the most personality I've seen her ever display, ever. It was just like, oh, I really like this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about you, Caitlin?
I had not seen it either. I knew of it just because it had been requested. It's a common request for us to do on the podcast. And that was the first time I learned about it, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
I remember someone in like a college film class I took presented on it and being like, college myself, of like, oh yeah, I'll watch that. And then I was like, nah, I'm not going to watch a movie. It's homework.
It somehow flew under my radar, which is unfortunate that this like fun queer movie was not even in my like wheelhouse, or I wasn't aware of it, because I feel like I have a pretty good handle on most movies, even if I haven't seen them, I've heard of them or I know about them.
You've been to film school twice for crying out loud.
Thank you so much for bringing it up. Because, you know, I don't like to mention that I do have a master's degree in screenwriting from Boston University. But, yeah, it just...
When did you go to BU?
I went there between 2012 and 2014.
Oh, we were probably there at the same time.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Boston.
Wild. Yeah, it's where I did my PhD, so.
Oh, okay. Trying to.
Are you
down,
dark
times,
Durante?
Dark times.
Are you trying to upstage me on my own?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Podcast?
I just got my much more impressive degree there at the same time, though.
My blood pressure just spiked.
Not even at all.
Very stressful.
Wait, what did you study?
Chemistry.
Oh. A woman in STEM.
That's why it's like not impressive at all, and no one ever wants to hear about it.
You know,
it's
I'm not impressed by your PhD in chemistry at all.
I think we also overlapped with Ocasio-Cortez, though, didn't we?
Oh, she was. I think she graduated in 2011. I think
something like
that. That sounds right.
Yeah. So I missed her.
So she and I overlapped. So once again.
Okay.
This is a spicy cast.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I'm never getting invited back to anything
cast.
Ever.
No. You have a PhD in chemistry. You can do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah. And I didn't
earned it.
I didn't mean for my reaction to be like, oh. It was more like, oh, I wasn't expecting that. I'm actually very impressed. And you're a woman in STEM, so that's great.
Let me tell you the most common response that I think I've gotten when if I tell people that I have a PhD in chemistry, I think the most common response is, what else do you do?
Really?
So I'm not offended by any response.
Who are these people?
Do that. That's fine.
I want to fight these people.
Oh. Lee has fought them.
Oh, good.
I don't
good.
Fight them. I just tell them about my awesome lesbian podcast. That's all. Mm-hmm. I just have two very niche things. It's cool.
Oh, also, really quick, I also got some, just taking the temp from the room, I was also getting some Josie and the Pussycat vibes from this movie.
Ooh.
Visually. Like,
yes.
If Josie and the Pussycats had, like, a fourth of the budget. Kind of like that. That's my statement, and I'm
and like a zillionth of the star power.
Exactly. They're like, we have Holland Taylor, but we only have her for 3 hours, so make it count.
And she'll only film in one room, so you have to green screen it every time.
50% of this movie takes place in the same room, and I love it. It's great.
Okay, so should I do the recap of the movie Debs?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Please.
We start with some wild voiceover that says that there is a secret test hidden within the SAT that measures a student's innate ability to lie, cheat, fight, and kill. And those who score well on this test are recruited into a secret paramilitary academy, mm-hmm. and they call themselves Debs. D-E-B-S.
The first 30 seconds of this movie, I was like, what? I had to like watch it 3 times to just be like, I get the feeling they're not going to explain this again. And they don't.
They never do.
Also,
no, never
do. Do we ever find out what Debs stands for?
Yes, we do.
What is it?
Endgame.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
we
I
find out
that.
At the very end.
What does it stand for?
It stands for
discipline, mm-hmm. energy, and beauty.
Oh.
But it's also like debutantes because Endgame is like prom.
Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, she does. Doesn't like Holland Taylor indirectly define it like 10 minutes before the movie's over?
Yes.
A choice.
Yeah, when she's reprimanding Amy.
A choice was made
okay.
for being a big old lesbian.
Right.
So.
How dare she?
Yes.
You're one to talk, Holland Taylor. You're one to talk.
I know. But this was like Holland Taylor didn't come out until a few years ago, right?
Yeah, she was not out when this movie was made.
She was leaving. She was leaving breadcrumbs for all of us.
Yeah. Okay, so that's some of the background on Debs. Then we meet several of the Debs as they're on their way to Debs Academy.
It's almost like Santa University a little bit.
It's almost like Santa University.
It's definitely getting some Santa
wow.
University vibes.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. We meet Dominique. She is French. She's always smoking a cigarette.
Very sex positive.
Yeah. Uh-huh. She's got many different dudes in her bed over the course of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
We meet Janet. She's a little absent-minded. She's a little flighty. We meet Max. She is the squad captain. And then we meet Amy. She is the top student at Deb's Academy. She's a great spy. And she is in the middle of breaking up with her boyfriend, Bobby.
Oh, Bobby.
Bobby.
He sucks so hard.
What a chode. They did not do, they're like, nothing that's likable for Bobby.
Hey, Jeff Stultz would have been like hot off of his Seventh Heaven run at this point, right?
True. Oh, I forgot that was where I recognized him from. There are so many people in this movie where you're like, ooh, I know that you're from somewhere.
Yeah, I feel like he wasn't much more likable in Seventh Heaven to me.
I mean, he's pretty horrible in this movie, though.
Yeah, he's the worst.
I mean, down to the puka shells.
Oh, my God.
Always bragging about his dad.
Yeah. Puka shells that belong to his father, right? What is that?
Yes. He's like, here are my dad's shells. It's like, oh. Please sort this out in therapy. Keep your shells out of this.
Yeah, for real.
He carries around a collection of his father's bracelets for some unknown reason.
And it's always like urgent for him to put the bracelet on her in midair. Yeah. He's like, no, you gotta put it on my dad's bracelet now. Love it.
Okay, so then the four of these Debs meet up with Phipps, who is played by Michael Clark Duncan.
Love it.
And Ms. Petrie, who is Holland Taylor. And
queer icon.
And they're like, hey, Lucy Diamond is back in the States. And
do you think Lucy Diamond might be a reference to something?
Nothing that I've ever heard
of. I actually don't really.
Such a general name.
So weird that those two words would be associated. I don't know.
I feel like it's completely original and not an allusion to anything.
Sick. Just checking.
Yeah. Okay. So Lucy Diamond is a smuggler. She's the leader of a crime syndicate.
She's Jordana Brewster.
Yes.
She's ridiculously hot.
She's very hot.
Very sharp.
Which Amy definitely recognizes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, I just didn't expect her to be so real.
Real.
So good.
She's straight out of like many shampoo hair commercials, even though no one's ever survived an encounter with her.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she is planning to meet up with an ex-KGB turned assassin named Nikotchka.
Ninotchka.
I like Nikotchka a lot more.
I simply cannot pronounce names is what I'm
Nikotchka Brjana.
Finding out.
Yeah.
And so Phipps is like, hey, Debs, do surveillance on Lucy, but here's the thing, it's very dangerous because Lucy has never fought anyone who has lived to tell about it. Mm. Amy is especially excited because she's writing her thesis on Lucy Diamond.
Of course she is.
And are they supposed to be the same age? That was a question. I was like, was she writing her thesis on someone her age, or is she supposed to be a little bit older?
It's really unclear, in the same way that it's unclear, like, it seems like they're supposed to be in college through this, but they treat them like high schoolers the whole time.
And they're dressed. Stereotypical private school high school student.
Well, I don't know typical private high school.
Well, I guess, yeah.
I think they would definitely be sent to the principal's office.
They're dressed like a Halloween costume of a Catholic school.
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about that. But, I think they're meant to be, like, seniors in college, basically, because they say they're in their fourth year of Deb's Academy.
So Lucy's just, like, a renegade dropout who blazed her own trail and thus is essay material.
True. Yeah. Hard to say how old Lucy is meant to be. I got the impression that she was maybe a few years older than the Debs, but again, hard
to say.
She's
hot. I mean,
right.
Here's what we know. She's hot. She has a friend named Scud.
Yes.
I don't have any more questions.
And we meet the two of them, and we find out that Lucy is planning to meet up with this Ninotchka woman because they are going on a blind date. Mm-hmm. And we're like, whoa, Lucy is a queer icon, as it turns out.
Scud is really wanting Lucy to be in love. Mm-hmm. Because
Scud is such a good wingman.
Scud is like, it's practically his job. Like, we don't really see him do much else other than be like, you gotta be in love, Lucy, move on, you got this. I was like, damn, Scud, you're really rooting for her.
Uh-huh.
Scud is like a walking lesbro / motivational poster in human form.
Yeah, you have to be open to love.
He's so supportive. It's great.
Peak Scud.
So the Debs go to the restaurant for this stakeout, and Lucy shows up, and she's there with her date, and it's not going very well.
They're in a very tall restaurant.
Yeah. The ceilings are like 80 feet high.
And no one ever looks up.
No. Lucy
It actually
does.
Is a pool, if anyone noticed.
No.
I just noticed
Whoa,
this for the
really?
First time. Yeah, it's definitely an empty pool that they turned into a restaurant, because on the wall it says like something about swimming. And if you look on the sides, there are little things that say the height of it, which is 6 feet. So it's not that tall.
Oh my God.
Fun fact.
Excellent budget they had there. Great. Yeah. Great.
So Lucy does spot the Debs, who are just like hanging out in the rafters. And so this leads to a big shootout.
Whoa. Wait, it's not that she spots them. It's that Bobby
is an idiot with the bracelets again.
One of his Chekhov's his gun bracelets.
Yeah. As you're so wont to do when you're hanging in little swings from a restaurant's 30-foot ceiling on an espionage stint.
Right. They're all in, like, circus swings is part of the plan. And then, like, every single one of Bobby's dad's bracelets is a Chekhov's gun the second it comes out. Because it's just going to happen.
I would also like to believe that there's an entire semester's class of Debs Academy that is solely devoted to balancing on those swing seats.
On the circus swings?
Well, because they, like, move. They can, like, shift them back and forth.
Right.
Like,
and they
side
don't
to side.
Seem perturbed at all.
No.
And the swings don't swing that much. They seem pretty stationary.
Yeah.
I'm interested in this technology.
Same. So there's this big shootout, and Lucy and Amy find themselves face to face, but instead of killing each other, they sort of vibe.
I love that scene.
Yes, it's great. And then Lucy gets away, and she goes to Scud, and she's like, hey, I met someone. Her name is Amy Bradshaw. And Scud is like, you can't like her. She's a Deb.
She's not just a Deb. She's like the Neo
Deb.
She's
Debs.
The perfect score, which, again, we just have some very subtle coded language in here.
Uh-huh. And then Lucy sneaks into Amy's room, and she's like, go out with me. If you do, I'll tell you what you want to know for your thesis. Janet crosses their paths, one of the other Debs, and so she and Scud get dragged along to this, like, nightclub that they end up going to, and Amy and Lucy start to get to know each other, and then they almost kiss.
And also, Scud and Janet are vibing.
They're vibing.
At the pool table. There's a lot going on.
There's a lot going on.
There's a pool table. There's a bunch of people that are, like, straight out of your, you know, mid-2000s mall Hot Topic.
So many mohawks.
Uh-huh. It's a lot of, like, giant metal ball necklaces.
Oh. There actually is a guy with a potato sack on his head, too. I'm not even kidding.
Wait, really?
I've seen this movie so many times that the last time I watched it, I paused it at a certain point because I was like, is that a potato sack? And it was.
Oh my God.
So just letting you know, look out for that. A lot of Easter eggs.
Because I will watch this movie again. I think it's so much fun.
Yeah, it's a blast.
So she and Lucy almost kiss, but Amy is confused about her sexuality, so she gets up and leaves abruptly. And now we're back at Deb's Academy, and Ms. Petrie is all like, hey, Amy, lead this investigation to find Lucy, and she also gets promoted to squad captain.
Because she survived the Lucy encounter.
Yes, so everyone's like, wow, what a hero. And then Max is all upset because she's like, wait a minute, I'm squad captain. This means there's some tension between Amy and Max.
And as they stated, whilst on the swings, they're best friends. And also, Max did something that I'm like, okay, this isn't what a great friend would say, but it did make me laugh. Of when she was just like, promise you'll never go to art school. I'm like, I wish I had a friend who had said that to me.
Right, because Amy doesn't have that much interest in being like a spy. She wants to go to art school in Barcelona.
Exactly, yeah.
Which is just like, I feel like the default for any like broody girl in a 90s 2000 movie.
Yeah.
I just want to be an artist.
Or a lesbian. I mean, just any lesbian.
Either or.
Right.
It should have been a hint. Read the signs, Amy. Read the signs.
So then Lucy robs a bank just so that the Debs will like go and try to stop her because she's trying to lure Amy there so she can get closer to her. And then Amy's like, ah, sorry, but I'm not romantically interested in you, Lucy. But then...
Also, but, and then in that scene, Lucy also almost kills the Debs and is like, it's a booby trap. I'm like, excuse me. You almost killed the Debs.
Yeah. She's like, what a good prank, huh? I'm going to laugh about this later.
I was just like, I don't know if I want to be in a relationship with this woman now.
I mean, we'll talk about the nature of their, like, the whole...
There's some strange twists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they kiss. Lucy and Amy kiss. And Amy's all like, she changes her mind. She goes with Lucy. The Debs all think that she's been kidnapped, but it's really just them hanging out, spending time together, and having a great time.
Which is a great montage. Also, they do appear to be in plain sight almost all the time.
Right. Also, the montage is confusing time-wise, because this montage appears to take place over the course of, like, many moons.
Yeah, a long time.
But they do mention later that she's only kidnapped for a week.
7 days.
Yes. Yeah. 7 days, yeah. So they just kind of made it seem a little bit more than it was, maybe.
They move really fast, I guess, the two of them.
Lesbians.
Let's not talk about lesbian stereotypes quite yet, but, you know.
Also, they're college age. I feel like in college a million times I would tell anyone I loved them after a week. I'm like, yeah, after they're like, do you love me? I'd be like, sure. I don't know. Could be true.
So then Ms. Petrie orders a search for Amy, and the Debs find her while she and Lucy are naked and kissing. And so in an effort to cover up what would be a scandal for Debs Academy, since, like, Amy was consorting with the enemy.
Right.
They plan to, instead, they're going to name her Deb of the Year at the big Endgame event.
And it's Max's idea.
It's Max's idea. And
she's very smart.
And she's going to give a speech to accept this award, so to speak. And her ex-boyfriend Bobby is going to be there with her to make it look like they're together.
Nobody has ever been more excited to take out a girl who has no interest in them than Bobby is to take her to Endgame.
Yes. When they're so dancing weird on the dance floor, she's literally, like, standing still.
Oh, my God.
He's, like, busting all these moves. He doesn't look at her at all.
Bobby is such a chode. It's wild. Yeah. I was pissed when Max called Bobby when they had a lead on where Amy was. I was like, man, Max, that's not what a friend does. Don't call the ex-boyfriend who wears puka shells. Yeah. Never call him. Never.
Ever.
Bad Never choice. Call puka shell guy. Ever.
So we're almost at the end of the movie. Everyone is mad at Amy for her whole, like, consorting with the enemy thing. And she's forced to suppress her feelings for Lucy and say that she's not in love with her. Even though we know that she is.
Because she said it.
Oh, wait. Sorry. Super quickly, we missed a really important part of the movie.
Oh, what?
The montage where Lucy Diamond decides to reform her ways.
Oh, okay. My important. God. Oh, yes. Because in order to be in love, you do need to change everything about yourself.
Right. So
exactly.
Lucy's like, I'll do whatever it takes to win Amy back. And so she starts to return all the money that she stole from people.
With the help and support of Scud.
Scud is there. They're singing karaoke together in what appears to be her bedroom. Like, they're just
It definitely is her bedroom. Then they pan out and there's four other people there dancing.
Yeah.
So, you it's know,
like, every crime operation has their backup dancers, okay?
Yeah.
It's true. Especially during a reform montage.
We're crying out loud. She has a little Batman signal that says Lucy Diamond that turns into Amy Be Mine. It's great.
So now we're at Endgame, which is essentially this ball prom kind of thing. And Amy is giving her speech and Lucy shows up to be like, hey, I actually love you and we should be together, which was sort of Scud's idea. And then Amy is like, hey, here's my speech. It's such an honor to be a Deb and blah, blah, blah. And then she's like, but just kidding.
And then she says, yeah, she literally gives the whole speech. And then she's like, comma, JK.
And that is why I actually need to tell you that I love Lucy Diamond.
Also, wait, can we just comment real quick on the speech accepting the Deb's highest award?
Yes.
Mary Jane.
Oh, was that a weed joke?
Didn't get it.
It's just...
They're throwing them left and right.
Yeah. Wow.
Damn. I'm feeling like
look, it's taken many viewings of this movie to just really pick out all of the super subtle hints and, you know, just hidden language in there.
Great. There's a lot of, first of all, really funny jokes. And I feel like a lot of them are fairly subtle. Like, there was stuff I was picking up on, didn't pick up on until my, like, second viewing. And I feel like there's still a lot of stuff that I missed. So,
yeah,
I'm excited to go back and rewatch it. So Amy's like, she professes her love for Lucy. Lucy is there. There's this big fight that unfolds. And then Lucy and Amy are running around. They cross paths again at the same place that they did the first time they meet. And they're like, oh my God, let's be together. And then all the Debs show up and they're like, wait.
That so wait, does that so mean that Endgame took place in the pool restaurant?
Oh.
Whoa.
I guess.
This movie That's their is only location.
Yeah, for group like, scenes.
They did have one building for 10 days.
But that
so
takes place in, it's like a warehouse that they're running around in. So maybe there's
really
like.
Know what
yeah,
where
the basement
are.
Warehouse under the pool restaurant.
Which is also in Deb's Academy, maybe?
Deb's Academy, the exterior may have been mostly a green screen. I'm not totally sure. I guess they could have been in the pool restaurant.
So then Amy and Lucy are like, yeah, let's be together. And the Debs are like, okay, we accept you. And that is pretty much the end of the movie.
Yeah. They ride off into the sunset.
They
and
ride off,
Scott and Janet get together too.
Yes.
Yes, that's true.
Happy endings all around.
Indeed.
And then she has to be like, this is my boyfriend Scud. Which is too bad.
That's a sequel.
So that's the story. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll come right back.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
And we're back.
Hi.
Hello.
Oh, there's so much to talk about.
Lots to talk about. So to start us off, Lee and Ellie, we just wanted to get your take on just kind of the overall representation. As we already kind of talked about, this is one of very few like fun queer women movies that exist at all.
Still to this day.
So we just wanted kind of to get your initial thoughts on like the representation of queer women in this movie and just sort of your initial take on that.
There's a lot to be said.
There's so much. I mean, one thing we will say is I wish it wasn't so accurate to be like, oh, here's one lesbian, she's a crime lord, and here's the other lesbian, she's an overachieving student, and they're gonna like move in and fall in love in approximately 3 hours.
Well, we have U-Hauling, which like we like to say is a lesbian trope. That honestly is true. Yeah. Like, you know, when you're like, that's a stereotype. But then you look around at all your friends and they're all live together and they've been together for like 6 months. So
describe for us what U-Hauling means.
Okay, so U-Hauling is a lesbian term where basically there's a joke. What does a lesbian bring on a first date? A U-Haul. Basically that
they can move in
lesbians
together.
Lesbians move in together very quickly.
Oh, I'd never heard that term before. That's funny.
Oh, really? I thought that, like, everyone knew U-Hauling. But no. We just live in a lesbian world, so.
Whoa.
Yes. So it's a stereotype that lesbians move very quickly, mm-hmm. fall in love very fast, and go through, like, every stage of the relationship very quickly. Mm-hmm. So 7 days isn't really that unrealistic.
No, it's not. I know. I wish it was less accurate, but.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. I do want to talk a little bit about one of the things that I think is problematic about Lucy Diamond.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Even though I love her and she's so beautiful, she is the predatory lesbian stereotype.
Yes.
Like, okay. Which, what I mean by that is you have in lesbian movies usually one person who is already out and a lesbian or a bisexual, however they identify, but they're already out. And then you usually have someone who's in the closet and you have this person who's already out pursuing them very aggressively.
And then kind of like trying to coax them and, out of
yeah,
the closet.
Yeah, kind of trying to like turn them in a way,
mm-hmm.
which is very problematic. So Lucy Diamond at one point says, she's into me, but she just doesn't know it yet.
Right.
And then continues for the entire movie to basically hold Amy hostage in order to get her to fall in love with her.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
I found this to be very similar to another problematic trope that we come up upon in hetero romance movies.
Just any predatory romance in general.
Right. Like yeah. basically framing stalking as romantic, where she does so many different things, where she shows up in Amy's room various times.
Uninvited.
She threatens her with a weapon to get Amy to go out with her. She robs a bank and then almost kills her friends to again try to get closer to her.
I still can't get over the whole booby trap yes. excuse. I'm like, who are you kidding?
And Amy also is like, it's very sweet that you did that for
right.
me. Is it
yes.
sweet? Like, I don't know if that's the right term.
It's, I feel like they're all things where if any part of this movie was even a little bit serious, it would immediately fall apart.
Yeah,
for sure. Because this is a very silly, campy
yeah.
movie.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that was one of the biggest things I noticed as well, where Lucy, she is basically stalking Amy, but it's framed as romantic. And this method of seduction yields successful results because
right.
they end up together.
And not for nothing, I found it interesting where I totally agree that there are like elements of predatory romance between Lucy and Amy. But Bobby kind of does the same thing to Amy at the beginning of the movie where she can't get away from him. And he's like, why'd you break up with me? Why'd you break up with me? And he's like popping up on all her devices. Then he slides in on his freaky swing. He's like, why'd you break up with me? Wear my dad's bracelet. And like it seems like a pattern in Amy's romantic life.
Yeah.
But the story doesn't really address that.
Well, and yeah. when Bobby's doing it, it's framed as she feels as though she's being pestered. And
which is true.
And it's annoying. Yeah.
Invalid. Yeah.
But then when Lucy does it, it's like, oh, wow, look how much she likes Amy. And look at all the effort she's going through to try to get with her.
If someone keeps almost killing other people,
don't
you just simply shouldn't be with them.
In fact, Lucy even says at one point to Amy, she's like, you say I can't see you, I see you anyway. It's this little game we play. And it's supposed to be this, like, you know, cute moment, but it's like, no, right? you're stalking her.
Right. It's like, is it a game or do you have a tracker that somehow can identify everyone in the world as either not Amy or Amy?
And she does have that, yes.
And then when the writing also indicates that, like, being stalked is secretly what Amy really wanted anyways, and Amy really did want Lucy coming after her because this is what she, like, it's just not a good message for young impressionable little twerps.
No, not really. Even if that predatory lesbian returns giant cartoon sacks of money with dollar signs on them,
which
just not enough.
Right. Well, that was another. I mean, that was another thing that sort of bugged me about their relationship. And I guess, I mean, it is such a campy movie that it's not like I feel like, no, I wish she was a mean bank robber forever. But that. But that felt like another well-worn trope of, like, one person needs to change everything about themselves for this relationship to work. Like, you have to, where there's literally that scene with Scud. I just can't say it enough. where, like, Lucy's like, man, I really love Amy. And Scud's like, so do you want to give up everything you've worked for? And Lucy's like, Yep. Cue the montage. Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's funny too because there's this huge running theme in the movie about, like, finding yourself, right? And they have that whole conversation when she's kidnapped being like, you know, you should be doing what you love. And Lucy's like, I am doing what I love. But then she, like, tosses that out the window, you know?
Well, maybe she could be a pirate, though, Lee.
Oh, that's true.
Maybe she'll... Yeah.
That was so weird, too, when Amy's like, Lucy, pirates are criminals. And Lucy's like, whoops.
Oh.
I was like, what?
Oh, everything I want to be falls under the criminal category?
Ooh, yeah.
So now what's she going to do after she's returned all this money? Like...
Can she even afford to live now? It seems like she probably can't afford rent on her big warehouse.
Two people cannot live on a art grad student salary.
I was going to say, if Lucy's about to go to grad school, they're fucked.
Plus, I do not assume that she did very well on her SATs because she definitely assaulted that dude.
Oh, God. Yeah, who knows? There's a lot of parts of that relationship that just don't work in terms of setting an example. But there were other scenes between the two of them that I really liked. I really liked that scene where they were talking about, you know, Amy is going with the path that she was put on without questioning it. And then Lucy's challenging that. And she's like, yeah, I do bad stuff, but it's like that was a choice I made and I stood by it, which makes it weirder that she dials back on it later. But
right.
I liked that scene between them a lot. Like, they do seem to challenge each other in a lot of ways and don't hold back, which is nice because Amy doesn't do that with her friends as much.
Right. Yeah, you do. I feel like in so many mainstream movies, which of course are mostly hetero, you see the romantic relationship, if there is one in the movie. Mm-hmm. You rarely get a sense of, like, why the two characters like each other or what they connect about or what they even talk about. But I feel like in this movie, you get a more of a sense of why they connect. And it is, I mean, for the first chunk of it, Lucy is using some very questionable tactics, and not even just the stalker stuff. It's like she's also kind of like negging her and or like being condescending to her. Like in the scene when they're in the nightclub, she's just kind of like being mean to her in a weird way.
Well, that's flirting, right? Yeah,
that is flirting. You're right. Yes,
yeah,
yes, yes,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, the timeless tactic that works on us all. The thing that comes out in the scene in the club that made me laugh the most was, like, you can tell that maybe at some point Angela Robinson gets the story note that, like, we should make it, like, don't make Lucy too bad. Because in Amy's like, well, haven't you killed a lot of people? And Lucy's like, no, they died of various diseases and or froze to death. So I'm actually a viable love interest. And Amy's like, okay.
Because I'm not a murderer. I'm just a robber.
Yeah. That made me I don't know. I thought that that was like very fun, campy, on purpose bad writing, and I enjoyed it. I hope it was on purpose, because if not, that is nuts.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's sort of the one line where Amy's like, "You're just not what I expected," you know.
Yeah.
And you're like, "Ah, yes, there. I'm sold on this now."
Yeah, you know when you ask someone if they murdered someone and they say no, you just believe them.
Right.
If they're hot. But only if they're hot.
Yeah, only if you want to kiss them.
Yeah.
And yeah, well, and I think it's believable too because their actual sexual chemistry is really believable, which we don't get very often in lesbian films. Mm-hmm. Because you have less of them. So the percentage of like good chemistry is going to be lower.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah. But I actually like them together, like when they're romantically together.
They're cute together.
Mm-hmm. They're believable.
They're super cute together.
Yeah. I was rooting for them.
That montage is adorable.
Yeah. A lot of sitting on cars.
The milkshake. Spooning on cars, milkshakes. I'm like, yeah, sure.
Gifting each other handcuffs. Yeah.
Yes.
Just cute stuff.
A thing I wanted to talk about is, in terms of like the queer representation, I feel like if there is a character in a movie who is like identifiably a lesbian, in mainstream movies, she will often be fairly butch presenting. Unsurprisingly, a lot of these movies are written by straight people who have like a very specific idea of what lesbians look like and how they present. So it's like pulling from those stereotypes and then helping to reinforce them. In this movie, the two queer characters who we see are very femme. Mm-hmm. And I feel like you rarely see that in, not that this is an especially mainstream movie, but like I said, in mainstream movies, you're seeing these very stereotypical ideas of how lesbians present. And it's always like, mm-hmm, plaid flannel wearing, like short hair, like, you know,
nice pair of overalls.
Yeah. Yes. Well, and this is also one of the only movies that you have both of them being femme. I do feel like a lot of the times you have one super butch lesbian, right, and then one bisexual feminine woman. Mm-hmm. Like, that's like a very common pairing. But to have both of them be femme presenting is not as usual.
That's what I was thinking.
Because I think they are trying to be like, well, look, there are different lesbians, but only if one looks like a man and one looks like a woman.
Right.
And like they have this like heteronormative look to them, even though they're lesbians.
Right. Yeah. So I thought that was at the very least interesting that you see that on screen when it's normally not that way.
Well, while we're on the topic of how characters are presented in this movie, just like a quick moment for wardrobe choices.
Oh yes.
In this movie. So it's a camp movie. I get that. However, I mean, I think that this movie, it's confusing because this movie is so over the top campy at times, and I'm like, I don't know if you are making a point or if this is just what was in the budget.
I had the same.
Like, it's hard to know sometimes. Yes. I wasn't sure if the costumes were commentary or if they were just not great.
We didn't have enough money for more fabric.
Yeah, the budget being whatever they found in Angela Robinson's pockets that day.
Yeah.
Right. Because they are wearing private schoolgirl plaid skirts, like, that are way shorter than even the other students at Deb's Academy.
I forget who said earlier that it looks like Halloween costumes. That seems like the perfect description.
Which, one, is not appropriate for the spy stuff that they're doing. Like,
no.
Because some of them are wearing heels.
The swings, like, too, if anyone ever looks up.
Exactly. Right. If anyone looks up in that huge restaurant, they're going to be like, you know, I don't know.
We know what you're getting at here.
I don't. There's the wardrobes, and this falls into, like, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of this movie seems to be parodying movies like Charlie's Angels.
Right.
But seem to just sort of be making some of the same choices without much commentary at times. Like, if there was ever a point in the movie where it was pointed out that, like, hey, this outfit doesn't make sense for what we're doing, then I would sort of be more willing to be like, oh, it's satire. But they're just kind of always dressed in ways that they could be so easily killed.
Right.
And
Not practical.
And also where you just have to wonder, I mean, for how many guns they carry in this film, where are they keeping them? Where do you hide your 8 guns in that skirt? That's what I want to know.
And they're huge.
Huge guns. Yeah, I had a lot of these very same questions. Also, when you consider the what I imagine is the intended audience of this movie, which is queer women, it then becomes, I guess, catering to like the queer female gaze rather than the male gaze, because, you know, it's these traditionally, by Western beauty standards, traditionally beautiful women who all have the same body type. They're wearing these tiny skirts. Some of them are wearing shirts that reveal their midriff, like some of them are in heels. So it's catering to, I would think, a different gaze than we're used to seeing when it's, you know, a mainstream movie.
But the outfits are the same.
But they are the same. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it is still showing like this very specific and rigid standard of beauty, because again, they all have the same body type.
Yeah, there's no like diversity in terms of body type in this movie really at all.
No. I mean, Max is a little shorter than the rest of them. That's
my I was talking to my boyfriend about this movie today. I guess he saw it on the Sundance Channel when his mom wasn't home and he was 12, and he was like, it honestly changed my life.
Wow.
It's one of Isaac's favorite movies.
No way.
I didn't realize girls could kiss other girls.
Like, he's like, my mom wasn't home and I just like I taped it. It was like,
that's
adorable.
We have to take another quick break, but we will come right back.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Speaking of the where do they keep their guns question, there are women with actual weapons in this movie, and it makes sense for the genre, but we've covered so many movies recently where if a woman has to fight someone because they're a woman, they're fighting with kitchen appliances or cookware or knitting needles. Or just
their words. They're fighting words.
So in this movie, at least the women have guns. Not that I'm pro-gun by any stretch.
But in an action movie, it stands to
reason. It is appropriate, yes.
I mean, there are a lot of ways in which I have to say the women, you know, they get guns, they have agency, they're smoking, they're, you know, like sneaking boys into their rooms. Like, there's a lot of things where they don't really kind of treat them like they're not able to do the things that they're supposed to be doing. It's just in a very, very campy way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and even in their hand-to-hand combat, I don't think a Deb has ever been knocked out, but like all the men are just incapacitated.
That is one of the cool... Yeah, I totally agree. Is their abilities are never called into question, which
although, I have rare. One important question about Deb's abilities, which is when you have Endgame, right? Mm-hmm. And Lucy crashes Endgame, and Amy runs away with her, and everyone sees Lucy Diamond, and that dude sounds the alarm, and everyone freaks out and starts running. Isn't every single person at Endgame supposed to be a highly trained spy?
Oh, yeah.
They lose their minds. They're like, ah!
Right.
That is a great point.
Why are those four Debs the only Debs who seem to have any idea of what they're doing?
I did think that when I was during my first viewing, and then for some reason during the second viewing, I was like, I guess I don't care. But like in at the Deb school, I'm like, why are they the only four that ever get to do anything? Are the other Debs just not ready? Or are they doing stuff we just don't know
they're
about?
They're freshmen.
What are their classes about?
Yeah, I think they're the top squad. Like the top squad. Maybe they get gun privileges or something. I don't know.
Seniors?
Yeah. And then here's something I wasn't totally clear on. Is Deb's Academy like an all women school, or are there, do men go there as well?
It doesn't look like it, but also I don't know. But then what is Bobby's deal? Because he's always wearing something that says Homeland Security.
Yeah. I don't think he goes to Deb's Academy.
How did they meet?
You know, spy.
Does anyone just
spy mixers?
Oh, he was like, oh, I'm dating a Deb. I'm part of Homeland Security. Like,
you meet on a stakeout at the pool restaurant.
Right. Oh, nice meet cute. Very cute.
Yeah. But they do make Bobby look like an idiot, like in all ways.
Oh, yes.
Like they can never find Lucy Diamond. At the end, he gets beat the crap out of by Lucy Diamond.
Yeah.
With literally one kick. He's out. So the men in this movie are not great.
Except for Scud.
He also gets knocked out, though, by Janet.
Yeah, but he lets her because he's in love.
He's into it, yeah. Feminist icon Scud.
Yeah. Because love is hard, Ellie.
Harder than crime.
War is easy. Love is hard.
Yes. Exactly.
Another thing that we don't get to talk about that much in this movie, I think, goes kind of halfway, is you don't get to see women eat in movies a lot, which is also crazy. But there is that scene at the very beginning when they're with Michael Clark Duncan, where all four of them at least order breakfast, and you hear that at least Max appears to eat food and the rest maybe not as much, but
Dominique literally just gets a coffee.
Black.
But she's also
she just exists on coffee and cigarettes, and that's it. Like all good French people do.
Coffee, cigs, and sex are literally the three things
love
she does.
My new podcast.
Yes. But I was like, we didn't get to actually see women eat, but they did order.
I feel like that's not quite enough. But it's a step in a better
2005,
direction.
You know, getting the order, that's progress.
I wanted to go back quickly to sort of the conversation about basically just the fighting that we see, which is often the women fighting men. And we've talked about this on different episodes where it's like, okay, well, in an ideal world where we have gender equality, shouldn't men be able to like fight women in these action scenes and like maybe even knock them out and stuff like that? And it's been a complicated subject that we don't really know how to broach, especially right. because in movies so far, in where there's action sequences where there are women fighting, it's usually they're fighting other women. So
right. Or they're only given a rolling pin with right. which to defend themselves.
In this movie, like we said, we see like women fighting and then usually kicking the shit out of the men that they're fighting.
Yeah.
Which, yeah. you know, I enjoyed. I feel like that's a step in the right direction.
And I think that the reason that it doesn't really, like, I feel like that conversation, as important as it is, doesn't become super relevant to this movie because it's so campy. And so it's not like, you know, we know that the Debs are better fighters than all the guys they're going up against going into it. So it's never like a battle to the death with a man fighting a woman. Like, you know, the Deb is going to win.
Right.
And that the man isn't going to die. So the stakes don't feel quite as like, you're like, okay, Bobby's going to get his ass kicked and we're going to love it.
Right.
Well, there is also some way in which it a little bit helps the cheesy high school Catholic schoolgirl outfits is that, you know, when you look at Bobby and the CIA guys and all those other spies are out there with like their suits and their outfits and their things and their bulletproof vests and their, you know, like big commando boots and everything. And the Debs are just like, whatever, all I need is a tiny little skirt, maybe a flimsy button down, some heels, and like a giant gun, and I'm still gonna kick your ass, right? It like, it kind of has that same thing as like Buffy always did, where it's like, she's just gonna be out there in her jeans and her big blue duster coat and
she'll always win.
And she'll always win, exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was weird. I mean, seeing, I agree that the way that the, like, I think because the ability of the Debs is never in question, nor is the ability of Lucy, that this movie, I mean, maybe that's what makes it so easy. And it's so comical how the men are defeated that,
right,
like, it's...
Because no one doesn't like watching Bobby get punched in the face.
It's different than seeing, like, Wonder Woman versus Captain America and one of them is going to kill the other, you know? Like, it's so campy.
Jamie, different comic universes.
Caitlin, as you know, I don't give a fuck and I never will.
God, the day Lucy Diamond shows up in, like, the MCU, that's just gonna
be... Oh, my God.
Does that mean that if they're in different universes, they can't meet...
Captain America and Wonder Woman?
Ever? They can never meet.
I don't imagine. Well, I mean, who knows? Maybe Marvel and DC will, 10 years down the line, have to cross over. Hard to say.
I hope that...
Maybe there will be a Justice League versus Avengers movie. In fact, I'm pitching that right here and right now.
Maybe they should just stop.
Hear that, Hollywood?
They should just stop making all those. There's too many.
I think there should be more Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse movies for sure. I think there should be at least 20 of those. But yeah, they can take a break with these other ones.
I have a feeling there will be if you just give them time.
I'll be patient.
Okay.
Well, that's one of the things with the movie Debs is that our four main Deb characters are all women.
Yeah.
The main villain is a woman. The head of Deb's Academy, which is someone who all the Debs look up to, is a woman. Mm-hmm. All of the male characters are secondary or tertiary. Like, you don't... Yeah. This is a movie populated almost entirely by women, and the men who are in this movie are hardly in this movie.
Yeah.
At the beginning, they try to do, like, Michael Clark Duncan is very much, like, doing an Angels, wake up kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And then it's immediately revealed that Holland Taylor is his boss. And,
right.
If we're going to talk about problematic things, though, can we just real quick touch on Mr. Phipps, who, while we talk about Lucy breaking into Amy's bedroom without permission all the time, can we talk about how he can apparently just, like, apparate
into her bedroom?
Hologram apparate himself into her room, like, with no warning whatsoever.
And then has the audacity to give an inspiring monologue when he gets there. It's like, are you kidding me? It's wild.
And is it inspiring after you just told someone that your basic test for aptitude is how good of a liar you are?
Right. It sounds like Debs should be the bad people based on the way they describe the test.
Right, how they can lie, cheat, fight, and kill.
Yeah.
But then they're like, and you're the best at it, so you're a goody two-shoes. You're like, what?
What? It's confusing.
Who knows?
But yeah, I mean, there's a few scenes where there's a room full of people Ms. Petrie will be there. The Debs will be there. There will be like maybe one or two men in the scene. And the men are just treated the way that women often are in action movies, which is that they are basically scenery who are extras who don't say anything. There's the scene where Ms. Petrie is promoting Amy to squad captain, and she's accompanied by two men and another woman, and the two men don't have any lines in that scene. It's only women talking. There's another scene, it's like the aftermath of Amy being discovered having a romantic relationship with Lucy, and all the Debs are there, Miss Petrie's there, Bobby and Phipps are there, but I think Bobby has one line in that scene, and otherwise men do not talk in that scene. It's just like...
Mm-hmm. And it's only after Max tells him exactly what he's doing.
Right.
You're going to take Amy to Endgame. He's like, okay.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, Bobby's basically in that scene to be offended that anyone might find out that his ex-girlfriend is into a girl.
Right.
Yeah.
Which he later dials back on with a gross comment also on the swing, which I don't think it's any mistake that that statement and the puka bracelet are in the same scene. You're like, yup.
Yeah, he's like, oh, that lesbian thing, it's actually pretty hot.
Yeah.
And then he goes, it's night.
Away in his fucking
like, ew.
He's like, I know you still love me, and your whole lesbian thing, that's kind of hot. And then,
I think that and Janet has one line at some point when she's trying to, like, shame Amy for the whole thing, and she's like, you're just a slut. A gay slut. I think those are two of the worst lines for me in terms of, you know, problematic things said in the movie.
For sure.
Yeah.
There's a few other things that are, like, pretty homophobic, I would say, in the movie. But I think because it's so campy, I think you do realize, like, those characters are clearly, they're making it portrayed that they're wrong. Even Miss Petrie tells Amy, like, you were out having your college lesbian experiment.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this is just a phase that you're having, and you embarrass the Debs by being an experimental lesbian, which is obviously problematic.
Right. Were there any characters that made those comments that didn't receive comeuppance later? Because I was trying to keep track of, because once Bobby made that comment in the scene, in both of those scenes, it's, I don't know, my head just went to like, okay, he has to get his ass kicked or this movie isn't doing what it's supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Janet gets away scot-free, and she's probably the most homophobic of everyone, because she is shaming Amy so hard for liking Lucy Diamond. Like, when they almost kiss, she's so offended.
Yeah, right. She has that whole, like, she almost kissed you, and you almost let her.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I'm interested in what everyone thinks about, like, the story. I feel like protects itself in a lot of ways, in a way where it's able to say kind of problematic things, but because they set it up as like Amy's a hero and Lucy's a villain, and conflating the two issues,
right,
is sometimes they're saying something about, like, it's kind of coded language of, like, sometimes they're talking about, like, well, the hero doesn't hook up with the villain, but they're also not talking about that. I don't know. It seems like the Janet character especially kind of gets away with stuff like that by couching it with, well, she kills people, so you can't be with her. Also, the thing I'm not fully saying.
Right. Like, right.
Yeah.
Except for the times that she does fully say it. And because that's the thing, is Janet is doing all of the same stuff at the very same time. Like, she's also in contact with Scud and having this whole flirtation.
But it's different because he's a boy.
Right, exactly. Right.
Mm-hmm. But I would say, at least my read on it, is that in most cases, in many movies, if a homophobic thing is stated, that is how the movie feels about it, rather than how a character who is framed as being wrong by the movie feels about it. So I feel like it, with the exception of Janet and her sort of weird take on everything and then getting off scot-free about it, I feel like generally the homophobic things that are said by characters who we as the audience understand.
That feels more satirical in a lot, or... Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, even and even with Holland Taylor's, I kind of wish Holland Taylor's character was a little more double downed on, like, her being clearly very wrong. Mm-hmm. But we always know that it's already set up that she's a problematic person in general when she doesn't give a fuck about any of her mentees until they do something that makes her look good. So she's already set up as, like, a very petty person. And so when she goes on to make comments like that, it's like, well, we already don't like her.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like Miss Petrie is not the redeemable character in this. I feel like it's right. The arc is supposed to teach you about finding yourself and being true to who you love, and it does that not using her. It's kind of, you know, you're watching right. that with Lucy and Amy. Max, to a certain extent, is a character who I think is shown having that growth of realizing, like, oh, well, a true friend will support you no matter what.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Agree. Max, I mean, well, we haven't talked about that friendship a lot yet, but Max and Amy's friendship is also very interesting, and also because their power dynamic in that friendship shifts a couple different times in the space mm-hmm. of the movie, yeah. where at the beginning it's clear that Max is in charge of the friendship. She's like, hey, if you go to art school, I'll fucking kill you. And Amy's like, okay. And so it's like, okay, Max is in charge. And then you see her have like that crisis. And it's the thing is, like, when Amy's put in charge of the Debs for not being killed by Lucy, I don't know exactly where how the movie wants you to feel, but I was like, oh, if I was Max, I would also be upset, because yeah. Amy's always talking about how she doesn't want to be a Deb. Max is busting her ass mm-hmm. and then has it taken from her because Holland Taylor's character isn't paying close enough attention to what the truth is.
Right.
And so I was like on Max's side for a good portion. And then she is very professional for the most part and like compartmentalizes and like is like, okay, we're on the same team, so I'll do it. And then Amy immediately fucks up
right.
and almost gets all of her friends killed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm double on Max's side. But then at the end, the dynamic switches again when Max is like, okay, deny everything and like play by the rules. And then I didn't like her again. I don't know. That character is all over the place.
But then she...
and then at the end, she's like, just kidding.
Yeah. She's like,
it's almost like careful character development was not the most important thing in this movie.
She's just flip-flopping all over the place. I was on Max's side for a lot of the movie. And
yeah.
then
yeah.
she really lost me. In that scene where it's explicitly Max who is like, this is my idea. Deny, deny, deny. Get back with your Homeland Security puka shell guy. I'm like, what
yeah.
is...
Yeah, the second she suggests Bobby, it's all downhill for you from there, Max.
And literally puts words into her mouth. She's like, here's a speech that I wrote for you. Say everything that I say.
Even when the other girls are like, what if she's in love? What if she makes her happy?
I hope that Amy and Max had a long discussion after the movie is over. Really sorted their shit out.
Yeah, Max pops up from the back seat in the car, and they talk out their feelings.
Oh, good.
Well, what I couldn't help but notice about that relationship dynamic is that the two non-white Debs in the group
mm-hmm.
are, when it comes to Dominique, she has very little screen time and or bearing on
yes,
the story.
Absolutely.
She's basically just there as a visual joke who's always smoking a cigarette or...
And having sex, which is pointed. Yeah.
Right. And someone even calls, I think it's Amy who calls her like a sex addict. And it's like, no, maybe she just...
That whole line is problematic because she calls people crazy and sex addicts. And
yes.
like, that whole line can go.
So it's either Dominique not having any bearing on the story, or it's Max whose actions are often presented as an obstacle for Amy. So she ends up being sort of an antagonistic force mm-hmm. for Amy a lot of the time. And meanwhile, you know, Amy is a blonde white lady, and mm-hmm. the characters who are people of color are either not doing much in the story or they are in some way an antagonistic force.
Yeah, I mean, they're very much there to help Amy's story develop and not much else. They're not
absolutely.
Very consistent. There's no real growth or any, like, you know, there's not as much given to them as characters. Yeah, they're kind of props.
And we want to know from our listeners, like, how you read that scene. That was the one reason why Max pushing back and being so frustrated when Amy just gets promoted out of nowhere. That's kind of like one of the reasons why that story point worked for me, because it is just like this blonde white girl who accidentally does the right thing
mm-hmm.
is is immediately put in charge. And then one of the only people of color in the entire movie who we know really cares about what she's doing has gone unrecognized.
Right.
Her work's gone unrecognized forever. And she's just displaced immediately. And she's like, she calls her friend out on it. And not for that explicit reason, but mm-hmm. I don't know. That was part of the reason why I was like, oh yeah, Max, fuck that, like that's horrible. But then they kind of sell that character out through poor writing.
Yeah.
Oh, sigh.
Oh well. Movies are bad.
Well, there's another very quick problematic line that gets said by Scud whenever they are doing this bank heist to lure Amy.
No, not Scud.
Scud. Oh, I know that line. It's so bad.
He says the R word. And
no, he does?
Yeah. He does.
Oh, yeah. I missed that.
Yeah.
Scud.
And it's funny because the way that he says it and the sentiment behind that line and his delivery of it is perfect, and that line just needs to go is the thing.
It should have been a different word.
Right. Yes. Like if it had been any other word. I mean, it's definitely one of those things where it's like it is a byproduct of a movie that was made in the early 2000s, yeah. And like you'd never see that line of dialogue. I also think that's true of the guns. I feel like you would never see the movie done this way with the guns the way they are.
Or the outfits, I bet. Like I don't think the outfits would be quite that way. Yeah, I think that I didn't realize that the R word was used in this movie. I would, not to cut a break in any way, but I do sort of agree that that is a byproduct of the time it was made in.
Yeah, it is, but that's what, I'm surprised that it didn't jump out at you because it's so noticeable. I feel like when you watch the movie, to me, it immediately was like this beacon where you're like, oh, you can't say that. Like, you know, because if you were watching it today, you'd be like, who approved this line? Like, right. Come on, you know.
I was too busy whacking off to Scud to listen to what he was saying.
Understandable.
Unbelievable.
That might be the single worst sentence you've ever said, Jamie.
Whacking off the Scud? I think that's a fun phrase.
Oh, goodness. I did want to just quickly point out Amy's thesis. She says, my central hypothesis is that as a woman operating in a male-dominated field, you felt the need to overcompensate. She's talking to Lucy. Yeah. You felt the need to overcompensate by being exponentially more ruthless and diabolical than your established male counterparts.
Yeah.
And I think that these psychological forces combine to create a kind of emotional void in which you're incapable of loving or being loved. Honestly, Amy's thesis sounds like a feminist text that I
really
do want to read. But.
Well, I don't know. I didn't really love that thesis of, like, I feel like that thesis to me almost came off a little blamey of, like, well, if women didn't resent their male co-worker so much, they wouldn't be killing so many people. I was like, well, hold on. I don't know. That felt a little product of its timey and the phrasing.
Yeah, I didn't give it much thought.
But something else that I also really love about it, though, is like from a queer perspective, you know, I think there's that whole idea of it's like, it's not that you can't love, you just don't love the way everyone expects you to, you know? Mm-hmm. I did kind of like that part of it.
Yeah.
I like that whole scene because I don't know, every scene where Lucy and Amy are pushing back on everything the other person says is good to me.
It is good to me. There's a way in which it's not that it's bad. It's just there's a way in which I'm going to completely undo everything we just finished saying about how like the Debs are just so competent and they can do everything that men can do in heels and skirts and they don't need anything. Everyone in this movie is the worst spy ever. And that scene is one great example where Amy's like, I have you at gunpoint, but like, oh, hold on, let me just tuck my gun under my arm to shake your hand and introduce myself and tell you about my thesis. And the only place where people are even worse spies than that is when the entire search and rescue operation descends upon Lucy Diamond's lair, finds her in a sheet, and doesn't arrest her still. They just leave.
Because they're shocked.
Really they funny. Just walk away and leave her there.
Even Max, who's supposed to be like the secret genius of the Debs, is like unbelievable and just like beats it. Like it's
just leaves. And they leave and they don't even drive Amy home. They leave her to walk. They're not very good spies. I'm just going to throw that out there.
No. God damn it, Debs.
They're not.
The last thing I had to say about Debs, was I went back and I watched the short film it was based on. Has anyone seen it?
Yes.
It is. I mean, it is so. It won a ton of awards the year it came out. It came out in 2003, so it seems like this short film did really well, and it was immediately put into production to become a movie
with the same budget.
with the same budget, except most of the budget went to paying Holland Taylor. but the short film
and puka shells.
Exactly. High-end puka shells. if you're listening and you haven't seen the short film, highly recommend it. It moves even faster. It's like raunchier. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that the short film does have an all-queer cast, while the theatrical movie does not, or at least a majority queer cast, which I don't know. I mean, I think that, yeah, I'm not the most qualified person to make this comment, but it does seem like very often queer films, when they're adapted for a larger audience, are, dare I say, sanitized a little bit, and straight actors are cast in queer roles. I'm fairly certain, I think if my research didn't fail me, Amy and Lucy are played by straight actresses, and in the original short film, that was not the case.
Wait, is Claire Kramer queer? Am I, like, just learning this now?
In the Amy and
in the short film, the original short film.
Oh no, you're right. I think it's the four Debs that are queer. There's a majority queer.
Why would
cast
you taunt us
time.
Like that?
I'm so sorry.
I'm like, oh my god.
I'm so sorry.
I was like, wait, my whole world is opening up. There.
No. Also,
Claire
it is
Kramer of Glorificus fame from Buffy. I got really excited that she was queer.
No, I'm so sorry. No, she appears to be the only straight woman in the movie. Or in
it's fine.
The
I'm just going to cry myself to sleep tonight. It's no problem.
I've fully ruined everyone's life. The one carryover from the short film's cast is Jill Ritchie, who plays Janet, who, fun fact, is Kid Rock's sister. So
wow.
Just a wild
amazing
thing. There's
amazing.
Debs is one degree of separation from Kid Rock. Who knew?
Something we all needed to know.
Yes.
Lee and Ellie, do you have any other final thoughts about the film Debs?
I do have one final thought, which is just, I think while it's so fun to rag on Debs, and I love ragging on Debs because I love it so much. I do think it's important to also mention that while we make fun of their low budget and the effects and the everything, that it is interesting to see the transition from Debs to what Angela Robinson can do with a budget, yes. Which is Professor Marston. And mm-hmm. It's such a far cry between those two movies that I just think it's at least worth pointing out, you know?
That Angela Robinson is still a beautiful human being
for
giving us Debs and Professor Marston.
And Professor Marston.
Yeah. Agreed.
And it goes to show, when you have a queer woman writing and directing a movie about a queer love story, it's handled, this is not to say this movie is not without its problems, but it is handled much better than when these stories are attempted by non-queer people. And usually those stories aren't even attempted by non-queer people, but it helps when the person who is creating this story and this content is someone who has experience and knowledge about these topics.
Yeah,
absolutely. Oh, yeah.
And it's heartening to see that someone making their perfect art about the queer spies can go on to have she's had an incredible career. Professor Marston is amazing. Didn't she write and direct quite a few L Word and True Blood, and like she's like making bank. She's chilling.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Is she a woman of color?
Yes.
Yes.
That is surprising me then, the way that the women of color are treated in Debs then, but
I would guess maybe it was producers.
Could be.
Yeah, I also feel like I think it stands out more with Max. I don't know that Max is that much less consistent of a character than everyone else in this movie. I mean, I think it's just everybody who is not Amy and Lucy kind of gets short shrift in this.
For sure.
True. And Lucy, Jordana Brewster, is part Brazilian. I don't know exactly how she identifies in terms of her ethnic identity, but she perhaps identifies as at least mixed Not totally clear on that, but, you know, there's...
I'll text her.
Yeah, please, please text her and let us know what you find out.
Mm-hmm. Great.
So, does this movie pass the Bechdel test?
The doy.
Yeah. Big fat yes on that.
You know, an easy way to pass the Bechdel test is have two women, and instead of having them talk about a guy, have them talk about how much they want to bone each other.
Yeah.
Done.
Surefire way. And... in one of the very few scenes that I found where they do talk about men, they are talking about Bobby, and Amy's like, I broke up with Bobby, and someone says, why? And she's like, he was just so boring. And then someone else says, yeah, he's an ass. So when men are being talked about, it's usually in an insulting way, which is great. I think also super producer Sophie pointed out that this movie would not pass the reverse Bechdel test in that there are not two men, I don't think, even talking to each other in the whole movie. Oh. But there might, if there is.
I do think that that's, that doesn't sound, yeah, it doesn't, I don't
I think
remember
there's that scene where Scud's playing bingo with some guys.
But nobody responds to him.
Yeah, and they certainly don't have names.
Yeah, we don't know who any of those guys are.
The name of my new band is Scud's Playing Bingo.
And this is a rare case of a movie passing the Vito Russo test. And if you listeners are not familiar with what that is, the Vito Russo test requires that a film must contain at least one character who is identifiably LGBTQ+. That character must not solely or predominantly be defined by their sexual orientation or gender identity. In other words, they should be made up of the same sort of unique character traits that are commonly used to differentiate straight characters from one another.
Treated like people?
But yeah.
Oh, so strange. Wild.
And the LGBTQ character must be tied into the plot in such a way that their removal from the story would have a significant impact. So this movie, without question, passes the Vito Russo test as well as the Bechdel test. So, amazing. In fact, I would say, in terms of the Bechdel test, this is just sort of like an estimated guess, but I would say around 70% of the movie is characters passing the Bechdel test.
Yeah,
it's like constant conversations with named women who are not talking about men. So,
and just imagine if they had cut Bobby's character, it could have been like 98%. I mean,
right?
I think we need more Bobby erasure.
Yes.
Except when it's King of the Hill. And in that case, more Bobby.
More Bobby? More okay. Bobby. That's an interesting take.
We can have a Bobby debate
okay,
later.
So let's rate the movie on our nipple scale, a rating of 0 to 5 nipples based on its portrayal of women.
This is hard.
I'm going to give it, I think, 4 nipples.
Okay.
Because there are brief problematic moments here and there. The movie does, as we discussed, subscribe to some of the stereotypes that we see of queer women, but the fact that the main cast is almost entirely women,
and a pretty diverse cast,
fairly more diverse than your ordinary movie, but
certainly in 2005,
yeah, but still no diversity in terms of body type, at least among the main 4 Debs. Yeah, I think that aside from a few problems that the movie has, which I think can be attributed to it being a movie of 2004, I would say it does fairly well in terms of showing women who have agency and who are propelling the story forward, and it's fun to watch. It's a funny movie. It is silly as fuck, but like...
there's so little movie without the women in it. Movie without any of the women is basically no Bobby movie. On a swing with some bracelets.
Screaming at the top of his lungs.
Right. The movie doesn't exist without the, like, 6 main female characters that are needed for this story.
Right.
So just,
and Scud playing bingo would also
I would watch that short film, honestly.
Yes. So it's great, and the fact that it's, as we discussed, one of only a very small number of, like, fun queer women comedy movies in existence. I think that's great. So yeah, I'm gonna go with four nipples, and I'll give one to each of the four Debs.
Aww. Aww. Yay.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with 3.5. And the reason we didn't touch on this very much, but something that always kind of bugs me in movies is when friendships are disrupted by a relationship, and a new relationship suddenly destroys your friendship structure entirely and sends your entire life into chaos.
Yeah.
And I was trying to go through that entirely. And I do think that in some ways, like, Amy's relationship totally shakes the foundation of, like, her relationship with all of her female friends. And that was something that, like, even though, like, her character ultimately grows and I think finds the best of both schools of thought and whatever moves forward, that was, like, one thing that I was like, oh, I didn't love that. I don't know. I mean, and I guess movies need conflict, and if you have a majority female cast, there's going to be a lot of conflict and infighting between women. But just the whole new relationship completely destroying a friendship group for the most part wasn't my favorite thing. But it's also basically a queer decom, which is incredible. I don't know. I mean, it's like, it's such a fun movie. I haven't enjoyed watching a movie twice back to back in a very long time, and it's great. I mean, for all the fun ragging on the low production values, it's a good movie and it's funny.
The story is tight
for the most. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's less than an hour and a half long. What more could you ask for?
Yeah.
and so I thought it was a blast. So I'll give it 3.5 or 3.75. I don't know. Somewhere it's a scientific. There's a Wikipedia page. Did you see that where people are leaving? So now I feel more conscientious of my nipple ratings and I'm like losing sleep over it.
Wait, there's a Wikipedia page
for us, and then they write down what the nipples we gave.
Oh, wow.
It's really stressful, actually.
I knew about the page. I didn't know that they were, like, documenting all of our nipple givings.
It's updated rather frequently. Okay, so for whoever is making the Wikipedia page, I say 3.75. And
final answer.
Yes, final answer. I'm going to give...
Also, if you are making the Wikipedia page, let us know that it's you so that we can credit you if you want.
So I guess I'm going to give one to each of the Debs, except I'm giving slightly less of one to Janet.
Aww.
Okay.
Sorry, yeah. Janet, but you are Kid Rock's sister, so life's hard.
Lee, do you want to go next with your rating?
I do, and I'm so torn as well, because I feel like if I vote with my heart and my nostalgic love for this movie, I want to give it four nipples. I do also feel like I think it comes in slightly lower than that, and I think my problems do have to do somewhat with the fact that I think Ellie and I both have our issues with the whole predatory lesbian trope. And I also do have an issue with the fact that I feel like they really toy in this with the age that they're supposed to appear. Mm. And so when you combine the predatory lesbian trope with the fact that they're very much casting them as, like, high school girls, even though they try to make it clear that they're not, but it sort of keeps presenting them that way, like, I have a hard time with. So, yeah, I mean, maybe somewhere around, you know, 3.5. Do we get to assign them as well?
Yes.
Oh, this is so exciting. I didn't prepare well enough for this. Okay, if I have to assign 3.5 nipples, I am going to assign one to Scud for his excellent motivational quotes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give one to Max because I think Max should get something more in this movie.
Yeah.
I'm going to give one to Angela Robinson.
Nice. Ooh, good call.
For, you know, just the gift of this and other things that she has given queer women. And I'm going to save my last half a nipple and I'm going to gift it to Australia. Because, like, what did Australia do to you?
Right. Australia gets sank or almost.
I don't like their attitude. All right. Well, I think I have to agree with you, Lee, that it's around 3.5. Mine is because of some of the homophobic comments that just, like, even if you're saying them in satire, I think they create a problematic message of friends not being supportive of their friends in lesbian relationships. Mm-hmm. And I think also the relationship between Lucy and Amy, where, of course, I love seeing them together, but when you actually take their relationship and put it on paper, it's very stalkery.
Yes.
So yeah. I really don't like that. That being said, I am going to give a nipple to Lucy Diamond because nobody has given her a nipple yet.
So true.
And what, she just...
What a hero, Ellie.
She needs one, all right? I'm also going to give a nipple to Max, of course. Mm-hmm. And Miss Petrie, because I love all the time. All
yeah! Two.
And then half will have to go to Dominique because I feel like she's the underdog of this. She has a lot of agency and she's very sex positive to me.
She's
even
so
though Amy
positive.
Calls her a sex addict.
Yeah.
So
there we go.
Love it.
Well, thank you to both of you so much for being here with us. This has been such a fun episode and such a fun movie to discuss.
Thank you for having us.
Of course. Thank you. Where can people find you and follow you online? Is there anything that you would like to plug?
In terms of social media, you can find us at Les Hangout Pod on all the social medias, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And we also have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/leshangoutpod. And we post songs on there. We actually write original songs based on lesbian movies.
Oh, cool.
So you can see some of those on our YouTube channel.
Yes. Awesome. Yep. You can also follow us individually, our social media things. I'm on Twitter and on Instagram at LSH Foster.
And I'm at Ellie Brigida.
And we do want to plug, we have our very first live show coming up on February 18th at the Bell House in Brooklyn. So we will be doing some fun things there about movies that should have been gay, even if they weren't.
Ooh,
nice.
That sounds awesome.
Oh, man, I wish we could go.
Let's take a trip to New York.
We're probably going to do one in LA at some point, so hopefully we can catch you there.
Yeah, let us know. Well, thank you again so much for being here. You can follow us, the Bechdelcast, on social media platforms at Bechdelcast. You can subscribe to our Patreon, aka Matreon, where you get 2 bonus episodes every single month, and it's only $5 a month. You can go to Bechdelcast.com. We have our merch store there, or you can go to tpublic.com/thebechdelcast, and you can get all of our cool merch, all of our designs, all of our items are right there.
Yeah. Get it for your sweetheart.
Oh, yeah.
Or yourself.
Anybody.
Or your brother or your sister.
Literally anyone.
Whatever floats your boat. I just gave my dad a Bechdelcast mug because my dad is a dad and therefore he likes mugs.
Dads love mugs.
And I sent it to him and he sent me back a text of his mug full of pens and the caption was, "My pens!" So Bechdelcast mugs are great for pens.
Must
confirmed.
Love mugs is love. Yeah.
My dad's dating profile.
Yeah. And rate and review us on iTunes and all that fun stuff. And otherwise, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters. Every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.